This week on the show, LeBron passes MJ, but will he get past the regular season? The Bruins' point streak continues. The Red Sox welcome back an old friend, and we tell some jokes. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Welcome, welcome to the Calling It podcast. Hello, everybody. I'm Alex Barth, as always, joined by Alex Levitz. We're powered by CLNS Media, recording on Thursday, March 7th, 2:01 in the afternoon. How are we doing today, Levitz?
Doing well. It's almost the end of the week. I got a good weekend planned. Going to a comedy show tomorrow night.
There you go. Who you seeing?
Do you know about Theo Von?
No, I do not.
Okay, look him
I
up.
Can't say I will.
He's very funny. He's got a mullet. He's from Louisiana, but
okay.
he's not a redneck. It's like I'd say he's probably one of the top comedians of the past year. The way he's blown up, he's got a great podcast. He's very unique, very odd, and hilarious. He's turned into one of my favorite guys in comedy.
I'm still trying to see John Mulaney. I don't know if you saw him on SNL this past week.
Oh, he's great.
That opening monologue. Oh, that was just I was crying.
Oh, it was hilarious. John Mulaney is I think he's the most sound comedian today. He's definitely a top three guy in the game. He's so good.
And I mean, Big Mouth too. He's just multi-talented.
I don't think he writes on Big Mouth though, but he is great on Big Mouth.
The voice acting's still great.
The voice acting's great.
He has to give some input. I'm sure he gives some input.
Oh, you'd hope. I mean, a lot of it sounds like it has the John Mulaney stamp on it. And he also was just in Documentary Now, which they are making a third season of. They made it. Now it's coming out. This is currently the third season. It's not Fred Armisen and Bill Hader solely anymore. Now they're like Owen Wilson's in it now, and obviously John Mulaney, and who's the guy from SNL? I forget his name, but he's in it
Bill
as
Hader?
Well. No, not Bill Hader. No, Bill Hader was in it last season. No.
Right. We could list comedians the whole show. We're actually going to do
it. It's the current day. It's the current day SNL, just to put that
out. Oh, it's Kyle Mooney, I think, right?
No, not Kyle Mooney. I know his face. I can't say his name. Let's move on.
All right, you have to. We're actually going to do some comedian talk a bit later on in the show, but I want to start with something else very funny, and that is that, for all intents and purposes, LeBron James is going to miss the playoffs, which is just – that's got to be music to the ears.
When's the last time that happened?
I believe never.
Has he been in the playoffs every single season of his NBA career?
I think – actually, let me double-check that. I think so, unless he missed it the first year, but – I mean, think about it. He made it the last couple years in Cleveland. He made it every year in Miami. He made it every year back in Cleveland. I can't remember a year he missed it. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The first 2 years he didn't make it. The first two years he did not. But every year
since.
So this would be
monumental.
Oh, yeah. No, this is – and the thing about the NBA for me is that 9 out of 10 times the best player on the floor wins. It's not about the best team. It's about who has the best player. That's why the Bucks are so good right now. That's why the Raptors are having so much success. That's why part of the reason the Celtics have struggled, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But the best player on the floor usually wins. So if you're the best player in the world and you're going to miss the playoffs, something's seriously wrong. And I'm sorry, it's not about the group around him. This Lakers team isn't great. I'll admit that. I think they're a hell of a lot better than the Cavs team he brought to the finals last year, and sure was a different conference, and you can factor that in, and that's fair, but LeBron went to LA to make movies. He didn't go there to play basketball, and I think now we're seeing that. Like, he's checked out. He's done.
Well, I also think there's a different perspective that goes into this transition to Los Angeles. One, it's the first year in a new city with a new team, opposed to what he knew at the time, knew before that season started, was the last season with the team that drafted him, his old team, his hometown team. So I think the motivation when he was in Cleveland was much greater from a winning perspective. I still think winning is his priority in Los Angeles. The guy cares about his legacy.
Winning his priority. Let me finish that sentence for you.
Okay.
His priority is winning an Oscar in Los Angeles. That's his priority.
Are you talking about LeBron James or Kyrie Irving right now?
LeBron James.
Okay.
Kyrie Irving doesn't like the cameras. He never wanted to be famous.
Apparently. No, never.
I want to get to those comments. But
Just to wrap up that point,
yeah,
I think he's looking at this season as a transition year, and you know, he's been all in on trying to get a guy like Anthony Davis, and they will get that second piece like he had with Kyrie Irving or Dwayne Wade or Chris Bosh. He's going to get that, but he doesn't have it this year.
There's
he's
a reason he needs that, because he is checked out. He made those comments, must have been like 2 months ago now. I believe he was talking to Sports Illustrated, and he said, it was the anti-Brady comment. I have nothing left, the anti being opposite. I have nothing left to prove. I have nothing left to show everybody. I've won everything I can win. Do you remember what he said? Something to that effect. I don't remember the exact quote, but he said something to that effect. And the rumor for a long time has been the last goal he has to accomplish, the last box he has to check is that he wants to play in an NBA game with his son, which is still 3 or 4 years down the road. Is he just hanging out now until he can do that? Is that what this is? Is he just killing time until Bronny gets to the league and just mailing it in and focusing on his off-the-court ventures? Because that's really what it looks like to me. This looks like a guy, you watch the way he plays, right? He passed MJ last night. He got all excited, but they still lost. This isn't a guy who cares about winning titles right now. This is barely a guy who cares about winning basketball games. This is a guy who cares about his off-the-court image. And it's really tough to find a reason he's sticking around the NBA at this point. He's been doing this thing for, I got to do quick math in my head right now, this never ends well, almost 20 years. Why is he still playing?
15, 16 years. The guy cares about his legacy. And guess what? He's not unanimously thought of as the greatest player of all time.
I don't think he ever will be. I don't think there's anything but what does he have to do? He'd have to run off 7 or 8 straight titles, which according to him, he doesn't seem to care about.
No, I don't think he even has to do that. I think it's a different game nowadays. And again, you can go back to the fact that Michael Jordan never had to play the Golden State Warriors. He never had to play a team that was the caliber of the Golden State Warriors.
He passed Jordan in scoring. Is he the unanimous all-time best today?
No, but there's more that goes into it than scoring. If you want to go scoring, is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar the greatest of all time? I don't think so.
I mean, there's an argument that he is, because as a wise man once said, the game is all about buckets. But
yeah.
So even if he passes Kareem, let's put that on the table. If he passes Kareem, is he going to be the greatest of all? Is he going to be the unanimous greatest of all time? Is that what he has to do?
Well, I don't think he's going to get there. I don't know Kareem's numbers offhand, but I don't think he's even going to come. I don't think he's going to get there at all. But I think if he wins a couple more titles, sure, I think he's there. I think if you talk about the most talented player of all time, he might already be there right now. I think he's probably the most well-rounded.
He is, most talented, by the way, about 6,000 behind Kareem.
Okay.
About 1,000 behind Kobe.
6,000. So he
another 300 after that is Malone, and then Abdul-Jabbar.
So listen, if he sticks around until his son plays, he might pass Kareem. 6,000 points is not unattainable,
and he could get that, but easily.
He's averaging about 2,000 points a season right now. Right?
I think it locks in more with the titles, and you know, another quote of his that he made a couple years ago: he'd rather miss the playoffs than lose in the finals. And again, how is a guy with this mindset, he can't make finals and lose them if he wants to do that, right? Even Brady, what's the one detraction on Brady besides the weird one that he likes to kiss his son, which it's a European household. He's a very affectionate dad.
Okay, that's what it is.
The fact that that's the only criticism. But the other one is, and as dumb as it is, and I don't agree with it, but the only one people can pull out of the playbook is, I'll take 4-0 in Montana over 6-3 in Brady. They care more about the loss number than the win number, right?
But that's
for LeBron to win 7 titles, especially with Golden State, with teams like Milwaukee on the way up, right? For LeBron to win 7 titles, he's not going to win 7 straight. He's going to have to lose some.
Yeah, and I don't think he's getting there. But I don't think that's the criteria in basketball, at least, especially with today's game. Again,
you just told me the titles were what he needed. What can he do to prove he's the greatest of all time?
I'm saying that titles are not the end all be all, but it adds to a legacy. Okay. That's undeniable. So I don't think he needs to get to 7 titles to win it, to take control of the consensus number one player of all time. It's going to pad his resume for sure. Obviously Accolades, milestones will get him there if he does surpass a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But here's the reality. We've never seen a player like LeBron James. Michael Jordan was amazing, but he wasn't as versatile as LeBron James. He wasn't as well-rounded a player as LeBron James. He was dominant. He was as dominant as him. But if you're talking about an athletic freak, I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like LeBron James in the NBA.
Let me ask you this. What about Bill Russell?
Bill Russell played in a time where there was like 10 teams and just the level of competition was far worse.
Right, but he was unlike anybody had ever seen.
At that time.
The numbers are insane.
At that time.
You don't think in 30 years every NBA player is going to look like LeBron James?
And then the argument will shift. Then we'll have a different LeBron James, you know? We'll have a different person. So it's like maybe
– Is LeBron James the greatest of all time or is he this era's Bill Russell? That's the question that I think people have trouble with.
Couldn't you use the same logic for Michael Jordan?
I absolutely think you could, but I'm going to kind of go SAT on you here for a second. Which of these statements do you think is more accurate? LeBron James is this era's Michael Jordan, or Michael Jordan was his era's LeBron James?
Well, that's a loaded – that's a difficult question because when you have a person who set the precedent that person's obviously going to be looked at first when you're talking about, you know, legacies that are similar because he came before LeBron. So I think it's obviously going to be the former. LeBron James is this era's Michael Jordan.
So and that kind of gets to the crux of my point. To be the greatest of all time, LeBron has to transcend that. Nobody is saying Tom Brady is this era's Joe Montana. Nobody is saying that. People are saying Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. And I know I keep using Brady as the barometer, but the fact of the matter is, if you want to talk about greats of the greats, that is the barometer. That is where you have to stack up to. Tom Brady is the nobody of this era. Everybody is the Tom Brady of their era. That is how the conversation goes. And that, to me, is what LeBron has to chase. He has to eliminate the idea of a conversation that he is this era's Will Chamberlain, that he is this era's Michael Jordan, that he is this era's Bill Russell, whoever. And based on what he's doing right now, I'm sorry, missing the playoffs? Those guys didn't miss the playoffs. Larry Bird didn't miss the playoffs. Magic Johnson didn't miss the playoffs. What he's doing right now is running counterproductive to his legacy. If he, let's say he misses next year too in LA, and people are going to talk about that stretch at the end of his career where he couldn't get to the playoffs. I know I keep using football analogies. Give me one more, and then you'll make your point, and then we'll wrap up the segment because we're really long. We barely got to – we have to touch on the Celtics real quick. But I want to make this point. Brett Favre is not LeBron James as they compare to their different sports. But you can't help but realize Brett Favre's legacy was tarnished by that extra year he played with the Vikings. And the extra couple of years he played with the Vikings. He was a shell of himself. He was an old man. He didn't belong on that field. It was clear. LeBron has done way more than Favre will ever do. But if he teeters out here with a couple bad years in Los Angeles where he's more focused on his brand than basketball, that's something people are going to talk about. When you talk about Jordan and LeBron, you know, was Jordan great on the Wizards? No. But to go back to the end of his Bulls career, we'll call it the real first retirement. Not the first mock retirement, not the second retirement. The real first retirement. Jordan closed his career strong. That's part of the legacy, right? Again, to go back to Tom Brady, 41, going to be 42 years old, still an MVP candidate. He is ending his career as strong as he has ever been. LeBron's not doing that. And not to say this is the end of his career, but if it is, that's going to be a major box left unchecked. So that, to me, is what he has to chase, and he's got to actually care about the basketball to do that.
Okay, so I get that. I think a couple things. One, longevity matters when you're talking about a legacy. LeBron James is going to, longevity-wise, is superior than a Michael Jordan. I think we can agree on that. Although Michael Jordan, at 34 years old, had very similar numbers. Well, sort of similar. He didn't have the same assist totals. Didn't have the same rebounding totals. But he had relatively similar numbers, at least from a scoring standpoint.
Yeah.
Two, with Tom Brady, because we'll make this analogy again. At 34 years old, was he the greatest quarterback of all time? He wasn't.
Yeah, at 34?
34. Probably not.
No, but he didn't come into the league at age 18.
That's true.
34 in the NBA is like 37, 38 in the NFL. And at that point, he was. I think the Seattle game was the final nail in the coffin for that box.
Okay, so maybe that's a very
so, – so this should be – I would say they're at comparable points in their career. In that's the comparable point for LeBron. For Brady, it's the Seattle Super Bowl. And that is where Brady set himself apart. And LeBron has done – if anything, he's fallen back to the pack this year.
I don't think he's fallen back to the pack.
I'm saying the pack of Michael Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain, not the pack of like the rest of the NBA.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Legacy wise, so I think at the very least, LeBron James is the second best player of all time in NBA history. Is he number one? Will he be? Maybe not. I don't think you can make that judgment just yet. I think we have to wait and see. Because if LeBron James continues to perform at the level he's playing at right now, because again, he's playing better than Michael Jordan was at this age, a little bit, then he could easily pass him. If he plays at this level for the next three seasons, passes Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on the all-time course.
Because he's playing at this level, he's not going to make the playoffs. And the NBA is the easiest sport to make the playoffs in, especially if you're a superstar.
How many teams – last year what he did was extremely impressive. But LeBron – Michael Jordan didn't make the playoffs by himself. He had Scottie Pippen. He had a number of incredible assets on his side. Not to mention Phil Jackson was his coach. LeBron James, and the coaching is partially his fault, doesn't have that luxury. Next year, when he gets that piece, because it is inevitable, you'll see him back in the playoffs, and you'll see him again being a NBA Finals favorite. You will. You just will, because the ability has not dropped off. And longevity-wise, if he continues to play at a high level like he is right now, the next 3, 4, 5 years, the argument shifts, and maybe he'll never be the Tom Brady of the NBA, but Michael Jordan will no longer be the Michael Jordan of the NBA. It's going to be up for debate for sure.
All right. We keep going back and forth on this. This is a really long segment. I do want to touch on some of the Kyrie comments and the Celtics win over the Warriors. Just real quick, the win over the Warriors, they win a good game last night against a decent team in Sacramento. They didn't have Kyrie Irving. You buying into any of this?
It's nice to see. I think it could definitely be a motivator. We saw it with the Bruins. It's kind of funny. We saw it with the Bruins a few weeks ago. They went out west, swept that road trip, with the exception of coming back to sort of the East Coast, the Midwest at least.
Right, and that was a very good St. Louis team they played.
And that was a team on what, a 10-11 game win streak. Yeah. And right now, I think we're seeing a team that had a good, nice long plane ride and has put a couple good wins together. I think that this could lead to something that can get them out of this funk to an extent. I want to see what happens tomorrow or Saturday night when they play the Lakers, and I want to see how Kyrie meshes back in when he does return, even though he's only been out for one game. Also, one more thing, Hayward, is he going to be more of a key contributor? We've seen a couple big games out of him between that Warriors game and last night. Can he be a key contributor? And that could be a massive factor for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's been good to see. I kind of expected what I was worried about is they were going to win the Golden State game and lose the next three, because that would be very this team to do. I was actually very encouraged last night because just a lot of what's bit them during this rough stretch, they kind of overcame. Not having Kyrie, they still won. Opponents went on a decent-sized run in the third quarter. They responded well. They were able to come through late in the game, make the shots they needed to make again, Gordon Hayward. So I'm encouraged. But let's see what happens when they come back east. They should win at least one of two at the Staples Center. I know how hard it is to sweep a four-game road trip on the West Coast, even though the next two teams aren't that great. If they lose one, that's fine. But let's see what happens when they come back east, because they've dug themselves into a big hole now. And even against the Warriors, that one win, it's going to take more to get out of that. I also want to talk about Kyrie's comments. When he said that he's so sick of the media, he didn't get in this to be famous. Dude, you made a freaking movie. Even with the wins, Kyrie's really wearing thin on me.
Oh yeah, I've been done with him, honestly. It got to the point where I
can't be done with him because they need him to contend for a title.
I understand that, and that's the brutal part. Like, he's so good that you might have to put up with, you know, just his personality, which is just god awful. There's clearly no introspection. He's not looking inward at all. He's someone who continuously casts blame, and he's a LeBron James type of leader with half the talent. And it's clear that guys have not been responding all that well to his leadership tactic. But like, get rid of all that. Forget all about that. The way he handles the media and the things he says, I don't care if the intention is not malicious. The optics are horrible. And he seems to not have any care in the world about it. And I'd say whatever if it wasn't a type of thing that would affect this team. But it's clear that they are very fragile in that locker room. And that his attitude translates not only on the court, but it spreads in that locker room. So you have a responsibility. Start acting like that leader that you want to be. And stop, you know, just making a fool out of yourself in these media appearances.
All right, we just did like 20 minutes on basketball. We got other stuff we got to talk about. We'll have more thoughts on it next week. And if we missed anything, you want to come at me about LeBron, you want to come at Lebowitz about LeBron, at Calling the Podcast on Twitter. We mentioned the Bruins a couple times. We got to talk about them. That'll be on the other side. This is Calling It, powered by CLNS.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Calling It, powered by CLNS, a show that now talks Bruins on a regular basis. We weren't great about it in the past, Lebowitz, but 17-game point streak. I don't want to say four-star hand because I always wanted to talk about it, but you know the Celtics just drew so many headlines, and of course it was Patriots season, that it was just kind of what naturally happened. But I mean, the Bruins, they've been so much fun to watch. They really have. The Bruins are, and yeah, that's pretty much. I'm really enjoying hockey season this year.
Yeah, it's. I mean, they've given us no choice but to talk about them.
Right, exactly.
I think that says all you need to know. Like last year, how often did we really talk about the Bruins prior to the postseason? Not much. There's a lot of storylines with this team, but more importantly, they're playing really well. You had the jokes, the Red Sox won, then the Patriots won, and geez, could be a sweep. It's not looking like that's going to be the case because of the Celtics. But it is realistic that this Bruins team can make it 3 out of 4 for a calendar year for Boston sports, which is nice to see. They're playing as well as anyone in the league. And just this past 3-4 weeks, this past month, really, since the All-Star break, they've been lights out. It's been unbelievable to watch.
And they've done it without one of their best weapons in David Pastrnak. And I know that there's some maybe application of the Ewing theory there. Although I don't think the Ewing theory really works for hockey. It's just such a different game.
Is that what's the Kyrie theory?
I get to explain the Ewing theory. I love the Ewing theory. Yeah, it's been used for Kyrie. So the idea is that when Patrick Ewing was with the Knicks, they sucked. And then the first year he left, they had one of the best years they've ever had.
That was with Van Gundy, right?
Right. And I believe Bill Simmons created this term. He definitely took credit for creating the term. I don't know if he actually created it because it's Bill Simmons. But basically the idea is that in basketball, sometimes if you remove the best player from the lineup, especially if it's a team where the best player is far and away the best player, so this wouldn't really work with the Warriors, but again, with a team that had Patrick Ewing and a bunch of scrubs, that the team's actually better. And it's not really something you can qualify. There's a couple different theories as to why that's the case. Some say because the ball movement's more unpredictable because you're not funneling everything through one spot. Some people just say it's because everybody else is more motivated because they know they have to do more, whatever the reason. That's the Ewing theory. I don't think that applies to hockey. Maybe it applies for just one line, and maybe that's some of what you can put on Jake DeBrusque and as good as he's been. But the Bruins are going to bring David Pastrnak back soon. He skated a couple days ago. He's expected to be back in the next 2 weeks. I think we'll see him for sure by the end of March. And people want to say, oh, him coming back is going to screw this up. And look, they might struggle at first because you got to reintegrate him into the lineup. That's fine. But I think long-term, especially towards the playoffs, it's a positive thing. The question is, where do you put him? Because the top two lines have been aces the last couple of weeks. And it comes down to two things. And I think Lebowitz and I are on the opposite sides of this. So just going off the Bruins lines from the last game, that would be 2 games ago. So I'm going back to the game against New Jersey. I don't have the lines from the Hurricane/Whalers game in front of me, but this is more or less what the lines have been. Marshawn, Bergeron, Heinen on the top line, DeBrusque, Krejci, Marcus Johansson on the second line. So Johansson, unfortunately, he had that bad lung injury. He's going to be out for a while. So the obvious choice seems to be putting Pasternak in on that second line with David Krejci. He succeeded there before. And then you have DeBrusk, who's red hot, and that could be lethal. Or you can move somebody like Charlie Coyle up to replace Johansson. And then you have Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak, that line that some may say is the best first line in hockey. And Lebitz, I'll let you start, make your case for what to do with David Pasternak.
Well, right now what you have is working. I think obviously it might be a little bit until he comes back, but the fact that you have Johansson, who is out with an injury, doesn't that kind of give you the decision you need to make? I think if anything, it's a sign. If it isn't broke, don't fix it, but you have a great piece in Pasternak, who's your top scorer prior to him leaving, or at least one of them. Plug him in that second line, spread the wealth, and make sure that it's not just the top line that's going to be dominating. That said, that top line was the best line in hockey, arguably, when they were all healthy and together. They're playing unbelievably. But wasn't the problem depth? And really, that comes down to the third and fourth line. But you plug Pasternak in, you move everyone down.
So you want to put Pasternak on the fourth line?
No, I want to put him on the – I'm kidding. You know what I'm saying. Put him on the second line, though, because I think right now the first line's working. It's going well. And if you can plug a talent like Pasternak, someone who's that elite of a scorer, into your second line, I can't see how that's going to backfire. It's just – really, there's no wrong way to go about this, in my opinion, because he's proven that with that first line, they mesh. But you plug him into that second line, I think that's the best route to go, and you're just going to have a way more balanced team.
I don't know. See, I personally would put him on the first line. I think you either move Heinen down to the second line, right wing, or you move Coyle up and then Backes can center that third line with Heinen and Chylarik. But to me, in the playoffs, you have to have Bergeron, Marchand, Pasternak together. That grouping is just so lethal. And if that's what it's going to be for the playoffs, and like we've said a couple times, there is going to be, you know, what's the term I'm looking for? Pasternak's going to have to kind of get his feet back under him. Why not let him do that? Like, get that line together now. Let them get clicking, because even if you don't start that with that line in the playoffs, if things go bad, that's going to be the line change. Just roll with it. Just roll with it from the start. I would get those three guys together and keep the three of them together as long as you possibly can. And then when Johansson gets back, his spot's back there on the second line, and then you're not moving everything around when and if Marcus Johansson comes back. Well, I'll say this too. You gave up a decent amount for Charlie Coyle. Put him on the second line. Make that investment worth it.
Well, also, don't you think Pasternak, just time on ice to start, you're going to want to ease him in to an extent, so that he can get up to speed, because it's not like he's been out for 1 week. This is going to be at least a month that he had not been on the ice prior to coming back. Don't you want to start out with a lower workload?
I don't know. It's a thumb injury. I assume he's been on the treadmill, Stairmaster, or whatever. I don't think that this is that kind of injury. Right? He fell walking to an Uber and broke his thumb. It's not like he's coming off a major knee injury or a major ankle injury or even a concussion or anything.
So maybe a lower body, you'd want to play it more tentatively, but you just want to throw him back out there, no restrictions.
Right. I mean, I'd assume he's kept his conditioning up. I don't know. I'm not in the room. If it is something where he couldn't, you know, run for a week and he might be a little out of shape, then sure. But I would assume with a broken thumb, they kept him in game shape. I don't know how much that would limit him.
Well, yeah, but you made an important distinction there, because game shape is completely different, and it's not about the conditioning aspect of it. It's about the feel and being on the ice and kind of getting into the swing of things. Cool. So, and when you're with a top line like that, maybe the game's going to move a little bit too fast for you to start out.
I think you just made my point. For me, if that's going to be his line in the playoffs, which I think it should be, get him with them now. Yes, there is going to be a feeling out period getting together with those guys. Get it started sooner rather than later. Don't have him get up to speed on the second line and then all of a sudden he has to readjust to the first line again. That's what I'm saying shouldn't happen. I'm saying if he's going to be with the top line, put him with that top line and let them get going. So when you hit the playoffs, I think they only have like 15 games left, I believe, off the top of my head. When you get going in the playoffs, like, those guys are together, they're clicking, they're on the same page, they're ready to go.
Do you think the same applies with a guy like Tuukka Rask, who's you know, Yaroslav Halak's been good, but Tuukka's kind of solidified, I feel like, that starting job as we kind of all imagined he would.
Do I feel like it's saying like they should start letting Rask get going for the playoffs? Have him start more regularly?
Well, so I think we agree that it's going to be Rask. He's going to be the guy come the postseason.
I wouldn't hate you know, a little bit, maybe 3-1. I don't know that it needs to be every other game, but maybe for every three Rask gets, Halak gets one.
Well, I also think it depends on you know, where the series is at.
That's true.
If you're up 3-0, maybe put Halak in there.
I'll say this about Rask. I think what you do now, because again, there's about 15, let me pull up how many games they have left here. And again, we're recording this on Thursday. They play tonight, so there's going to be one less game left after tonight. There's 66. I had to do the math on my hands. I got 15 games left. It'll be 14 left after tonight. What I do is I actually start giving Halak a few more starts here and let Rask get his rest. And then with about 4 or 5 games left, you have Rask start 3 of those 4 or 4 of those 5 to get him ready for the playoffs. But now's when I make sure Rask gets his – he doesn't need to be up near a 55-60 number. He should finish the year at about 45, maybe 50 starts. So put it on that pace, and if that means Halak gets a couple more starts, give him a couple more starts. And then that last week of the season, the last 2 weeks, you let Rask get in the playoff shape. That's how I would do it.
Yeah, I think I agree with that because, I mean, the one thing is, as we've seen towards the end of the year, he gets a little bit depleted. I do think the fact that it has been an even load this season, you know, the benefit of that, you're already going to see regardless of how much he plays down the stretch. So I don't think there's really a wrong way to handle it. I just think you got to make sure he's good to go and he's you know, a well-oiled machine come the postseason. That said, if it's not like he's going to play less than half of the remaining games. And if he doesn't do that, I think he'll be fine regardless of how Cassidy handles it.
He's started 35 games with 15 games to go. I think I saw he's starting tonight. So it'll be 36 with 14 to go by the time most people probably listen to this. Yeah, you let him, of the last 14, have him start 8 or 9. That's kind of what I would look at right now. And then you're looking at mid-40s for a starts number, mid-to-high 40s, and I think that's exactly where he needs to be. Speaking of being careful about playing time, somebody's coming back for the Red Sox, and playing time is going to be the biggest factor in what kind of difference he can make this year. We'll talk about that on the other side. This is Calling It, powered by CLNS.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Third segment of Calling It, powered by CLNS Media. Alex Barth along with Alex Lebowitz. We got to talk some Red Sox, Lebowitz, because as we're recording this, the Red Sox have a spring training game going on, and Dustin Pedroia is making his spring training debut. That's right, that old man, he is back. As we continue to kind of touch on Red Sox topics here, and we're sort of doing one a week as we get closer to the season, we'll do a season preview right before the season starts. Let's talk about Dustin Pedroia. They thought they'd have him make a difference last year. He could barely get on the field. Why is this year any different?
It's not.
Thank you. Okay, finally. Thank you. Somebody. Thank you.
It's not different at all. I mean, this guy, he's what, 35 years old now? I want to say 35 years old.
Yeah.
He's about 5'1", and he has played really hard, has played passionately, I'll say, for the entirety of his career. The guy is a walking injury, and that is because of his style of play. He's a gold glover for a reason. And unfortunately, the cost is longevity. He's not going to be the same guy he was back in 2008. He's not going to be a 200 hit a season guy. He's not going to be hitting 340 rather. Maybe he can get up to the 300 mark. I don't think ability is the problem. It's the ability to stay on the field, to stay healthy. You know what?
Go ahead. Go ahead. Finish.
Yeah, I
think my main point on this is going to contradict what you just said, but finish up.
Well, I just don't think he's an everyday guy. I think he can be a great player, a great piece. If he plays 3-4 times a week, he cannot be your everyday second baseman. And it's unfortunate because his glove is half of the reason he's so valuable. So he's not going to be that guy this season. He's probably going to be hurt. And he strikes me as the type of player who's going to stick around longer than he probably should. That said, if I were him, I'd contemplate retiring after this season, honestly.
Well, look, he's on that ridiculous contract that he signed a couple years ago. And it's in the Red Sox best interest to get what they can out of him and try to get him on the roster. I'm not saying they shouldn't. Nobody's going to trade for him. any of that. He still got, including this year, three more years at $15, $13, and $12 million a year. But I don't think he can be an everyday player. And some of that's the injury. Some of it is the ability. If you look at his last two full seasons, so we're discounting last year when he was hurt. So this is 2016 and 2017. He had 318 in 2016. That's a good number. He had a great year.
Yeah.
The next year, 2017, he hit 293. That's a pretty good number.
Not
but
bad.
That's a 25-point drop in batting average. Let's say he drops 25 points again. Let's say it's a linear decline for Dustin Pedroia, who's going to be 35 years old. Another 25 points off is hitting in the mid-260s. Do you want him hitting in the mid-260s at the top of that lineup? Because he's not going to hit 7th, 8th, and 9th. He won't accept that. And you're going to have a problem if you're Alex Cora doing that. So do you want to have a 260 bat at the top of your lineup on a regular basis? Because I don't.
Well, I don't know if he wouldn't accept that. I wouldn't put it past him being able to deal with batting in the bottom third. That's absolutely something he could do. Look at Jackie Bradley Jr. He's batting ninth for a
lot. Jackie only hits at the bottom of the lineup.
Not sure. That's where he performs like, best.
That's what he has to. I'm just worried with Pedroia. He started to show decline in 2017. Last year, it's tough to say because he's clearly playing hurt. I don't know that the Red Sox should be counting on him to play any more than 70 or 80 games. That shouldn't be part of their plans. They should have an everyday second baseman in place, and then anything you get from Dustin Pedroia is a cherry on top. That's how I look at Dustin Pedroia this year. Anything he gives you, any benefit you get from him, is just bonus. It's just gravy. You have to go in planning the year like you won't have him.
I agree. I think that, you know, his expectations are so low, you're not relying on him all that much. And given that fact, you don't need him to be your everyday guy. That said, I think he still has ability. I think he can still hit 300. Even when he's hurt, even when he's banged up, he hits the ball well. The ability's still there. It's you just cannot stay healthy. And one thing that sticks out to me is the fact that he's open about the fact that he regrets getting knee surgery. It's like, if that's going to be a continuous source of problems for you, how can you expect to be a real key contributor to this team? He's not going to be great. The expectations are not going to be high.
That's the weird thing. I think they are from some people.
I don't think they are.
And that's what's
confusing
me. I've seen people say that, you know, oh, we're welcoming back a former MVP. Well, then why don't the Red Sox sign Carlos Yastrzemski if we're all about welcoming back MVPs? Like, I'm sorry, you'll get 80, 90 games out of him. He'll hit about 260, maybe 270, and he'll give you good defense. That's what I'm expecting out of him as the bench infielder. That's what I'm hoping to get from him.
Yeah, and I think that wouldn't be awful. I don't know, 290, 300, I can see him hitting.
I think you're looking at 260, 270. I think if you get into 280,
he's never hit that poorly, though. That's the only problem. That's the only reason
he's never played ball at the age of 36 after basically sitting out the previous year with a serious injury.
Well, and it's been two or three seasons he's had some pretty bad injuries that have sidelined him for an extended period of time. That's a problem. But I don't know. I think we'll know if he's still dealing with nagging injuries by, you know, what he's doing, his performance. If he's fine, though, if he's healthy, he can be a contributing factor. He's a good player. You know, he's reliable in the field, and he's got a great he's got a good bat. Obviously, when guys get older, you look at their bat speed. Will it be the same? Can they adjust? I think those things are yet to be seen. That said, my confidence level in him is not very high. But again, that's not because of his ability. It's because of his health and his ability to stay healthy.
All right. There's one more Red Sox topic, and that's Stephen Wright. He's been suspended for 80 games because of not just PEDs, HGH, like the big stuff. And
that's what Peyton Manning did as well, allegedly.
Do we even need to say allegedly?
Probably not.
Before we get into the actual fun I want to have with this, just Lebo, it's going to be 20 seconds. A knuckleballer taking HGH.
Well, so I think people are under the impression that he did this to get ripped. I don't think he did. He had a knee injury last year. He was sidelined for most of the season. I think he did this to get back on the field and to recover faster. In that sense, it makes sense. Also, I think HGH should be allowed in all sports. It's proven to help recovery, and it's not that detrimental for your health.
And it makes it is games funny, more watchable. Though. And here's the thing. I think it was like the P2 peptide thing, like the old school stuff they were taking. I remember on MLB 2K12, which is unfortunately the last baseball game I can play because they don't make the show for the Xbox, and I pretty much spend an entire month every year while those trailers are coming out, very bitter that I can't play the show, but I digress. In MLB 2K12, there was a glitch where you could create a player who could throw a knuckleball 95 miles an hour. I always wanted to see that in real life. I appreciate Stephen Wright for trying to help make that dream come true.
R.A. Dickey could hit 84 with a knuckleball. 85.
That's true. That's true. And did R.A. Dickey piss in the cup? I don't know. But the matter of the fact is, I know people are saying this affects the bullpen. I don't think there's too much consequence in the suspension for the Red Sox. They got by most of last year without him. John Farrell may have screwed them out of a good pitcher, but they won the World Series last year mostly without him. Whatever. What is a bummer is that Stephen Wright has always been one of my favorite Red Sox because of his name. Stephen Wright, like the comedian. So, Lebowitz and I are fans of comedy, as we talked about at the beginning of the show. I know some Stephen Wright jokes. He knows some Stephen Wright jokes. We're going to play a little game here. We're going to tell Stephen Wright jokes back and forth. And if you laugh at either your own joke or the other person's, any sort of laugh, you get a strike. Three strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Lebowitz, I'll let you go first. You ready?
Okay, I'll try. I'm just going to give this warning. I don't know if I'm going to laugh because I love Stephen Wright, but he's got a dry sense of humor. And it's more my thing is like that's a good one. That's like my reaction to him. But
any sort of snicker and no muting the microphones.
I'm not muting the microphones.
Any
never.
Snicker, any nut. Look, I'll give us like 3 minutes for one of us to laugh, but let's see. Go ahead. All right. Start us off.
Okay, I'm going to do my Stephen Wright voice. All those who believe in telekinesis, raise my hand.
Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one. I'm grinning a little bit. All right, my turn. Yesterday, I went out and bought batteries. They weren't included.
Okay.
All right. That's a good one. Go ahead. This is riveting audio. Go ahead.
Support bacteria. They're the only culture some people have.
Ooh, all right. That's topical. That's a good one. All right. I installed a skylight in my apartment. The people who live above me are pissed. Nothing. Damn, that's one of my favorite ones.
That's a good one. No, it's a good one. It's a good one. Right. Hang on. I almost had a psychic girlfriend, but she left before we met.
All right. Let me think here. Okay. I spilled spot remover on my dog. Now he's gone.
Okay.
I almost caught myself with that one. All right, go ahead.
Boycott shampoo. Demand the real poo.
Oh, damn, you almost got me with that one.
Okay. I'm chuckling.
I'm starting to break here a little bit.
Okay, I think this next one's going to
– Okay, well, I got one here. If you're driving a car and going the speed of light, what happens when you turn the headlights on? Nope. All right. Go ahead. Hit me.
Okay, I got a couple more that I think might
work. All right. Okay. All right.
If at first you don't succeed, then skydiving definitely is not for you.
Oh man, you almost got me. All right.
You see, I'm laughing because we're not laughing.
Right.
It's like this is the Stephen Wright thing is it gets you on the cusp of being chuckling. Like,
hope people listening are laughing at this. If not, this is just awful, awful radio. But we'll try a couple
great.
More.
This is great. Not,
we'll say it's a tie. All right. Here we go. I intend to live forever. So far, so good.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Let me see. Hang on one second. When everything is coming your way, you're in the wrong lane.
Oh man, that's very similar to the one I was about to tell.
Okay.
I live on a one-way dead end. I'm not sure how I got there or what I need to do when I leave.
Okay. 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 What happens if you get scared half to death twice?
Almost. I smiled. Almost. Okay,
I saw.
All right. There's a fine line between fishing and standing on a dock looking like a moron.
That's a good one. I feel like next we should do Mitch Hedberg because I think that's a step above.
And when the Red Sox get a pitcher named Mitch Hedberg, I mean, we'll do it.
That's true. Hey, we can make a segment out of it.
All right. One more. One
okay,
more.
Okay. Wait. I got. Okay. Yeah. One more.
Okay. If you have two more, we can do two more if you have two more good ones.
Okay. A clear conscience is usually the sign of a bad memory. These are just like, this
is
fortune.
Like just deep, yeah.
This is just fortune cookie stuff.
All right, I got one. Yesterday, I parked my car in a tow-away zone. When I came back, the entire zone was gone.
Okay.
All right.
I'd kill for a Nobel Peace Prize.
That's it. That's one of my favorite ones, actually. All right, here we go. Last one. If you don't laugh, we both have guts of steel. Ready? One time a cop pulled me over for running a stop sign. He said, "Didn't you read the stop sign?" I said, "Yeah, but I don't believe everything I read."
That's a good one.
Is that a laugh? Is that a laugh?
No, it's a, it's
we get a little chuckle there?
No, it's more of a sigh.
All right, it's a draw.
Okay, one more that I really like. I think I told you this one earlier.
Go ahead.
I put a humidifier and a dehumidifier in the same room. Just let them fight it out.
That's like the first one I ever heard. All right, so
that's a really good one. All right, I actually knew that's exactly how that segment would go, but I wanted to do anyway because I know it's right.
I don't know. I thought we might get a chuckle or two out of it, but it probably.
You want me to do Louis C.K.? I can do. We can't do him anymore. If you want me to do John Mulaney, we can do.
Look, we'll bookmark that for this summer. Just telling jokes back and forth, trying to get the other one to laugh. But if you have any Stephen Wright jokes, you listening, you want to submit at Call the Podcast on Twitter. We'll be back next week. More Red Sox, more Bruins, more Celtics, maybe some March. Next week, March Madness. It'll be leading up to conference tournament week. All that coming up next week. Again, follow us on Twitter at Call the Podcast. Check us out online at clnsmedia.com. For Alex Lubitz, I'm Alex Barth. This has been the Call the Podcast. Thanks for listening.